I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress that is trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. It's a great mattress at a very reasonable price point. Comes with a 20-year warranty. And a great deal for our listeners. Douglas is giving you a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. That is douglas.ca/CanadaLand. Hey, we used to just ask you for money because we need money, and then we would just give you the same podcast for free. But we figured out a way to give you something good in exchange for your money, and that is ad-free versions of this podcast for $5 Canadian a month. Just click the link in your show notes and bloop, it installs a premium Canada Land golden podcast feed right on your podcatcher, or go to canadalandshow.com/join. Support from you is how we do this. Thank you. I think most Canadians are sympathetic to Indigenous people. We know this country's history, you know, broad strokes. And I think it's kind of acknowledged that Indigenous people got a raw deal. And we feel bad about that. So, yeah, Canadians are open to making things right. Even land claims. A lot of people are ready to try to work it all out. I mean, it would be nice to not have to always feel so guilty about this stuff. But I also think that most Canadians' sympathy ends when our lives get disrupted. I mean, what a shame. You had a legitimate argument, but when you start blocking roads and railways, you've basically lost all legitimacy. I mean, first of all, you're in our way. And second of all, you're scaring the shit out of us. I mean, show Canadians pictures of Indigenous men at blockades with bandanas over their faces, strange flags waving behind them, or even worse, armed Indigenous people. And a lot of Canadians are going to agree. It's time to send in the police. I mean, congratulations. You got our attention, but you've lost our sympathy. Problem is, Canadians don't really pay attention to peaceful, non-disruptive protests. I'm including myself in that. I mean, even though Wet'suwet'en was the biggest story in Canada last winter, I was more or less oblivious to the fact that a very similar standoff has been brewing right here in Ontario for weeks. And it was not the peaceful protest that ultimately got my attention. It was the fact that Premier Doug Ford talked about it.
Last question comes from Randy Rath from CHCH TV. Please go ahead.
Hi, Premier.
Hi, Randy. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Yesterday in Caledonia, the OPP tried to enforce a court order removing protesters from a housing development. The police action failed, and the result's an ongoing demonstration on Argyle Street. What do you make of this situation, and what do you think should be done to try to resolve it?
Well, you know something, I'm just so disappointed when I heard this again. We have a phenomenal, myself, and I give all the credit to Minister Rickford, have a phenomenal relationship with Chief Archibald and all the chiefs that I met. And they're such an incredible community. And you get a few of them out there that want to do these things. And what really is so disturbing, and the people at home listening to this will appreciate this. These people put their whole life savings to buy a home, and then someone comes in and just says, I'm taking over. It's just wrong. There's one country, one law, respect each other. And it, when the indigenous communities or Roseanne or anyone ask me for something, I say, you know, they say jump, I say oh hi. As soon as they ask for something, bang, I'm on it within a second. And I have a great deal of respect for these communities right across the province. We're there to support them and help them. But there has to be a two-way street here. You know, you just can't go in and just take over people's future homes. It's wrong. And then when the police come, this is where the people at home are really going to, they get an outhouse, toss it over from a bridge onto a police car. Then they start throwing rocks at the police car. Like, enough is enough. You know, I'm just losing my patience. I can't direct the police, and I won't direct the police. But people have to obey the rules. I don't care where you come from, you know, what your race, creed, color, whatever. We have one country, one rule, and that is it. Simple. Respect each other. Because I have a tremendous amount of respect for the indigenous community, and there's just a few, a couple dozen, uncalled for. It's unacceptable. Follow I better up. Stop there.
Premier, are you afraid that this situation is going to escalate? As you say, there was rock throwing both at the police and at the fire department.
It's terrible.
Responding to things burning. The police had to, or the police responded firing rubber bullets. It's just the whole intensity and level of this thing concerning.
It is. This is not Ontario. That's not Canada. You don't start throwing rocks. You don't start tossing things. This is about living together, working together. When the indigenous community, and believe me, 99.99% are just phenomenal people, absolutely phenomenal, and I love them, and they know I do, and we get along phenomenal. You get a couple bad apples that want to create problems, and there's an issue. I'm open. Sit down. Talk to me. What's the issue? I'm always there for you. I always support you. Anything you need, like I said before, instantly we get it done for you. So it has to be give and take. And 99.99%, I keep wanting to emphasize that, are phenomenal people. So I better wrap up there.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
So there you go. Everything he just said could have been describing a dozen different land claim standoffs over the years. Happens to be about one that's going on right now. Let me fill in the blanks. The site is on the edge of Caledonia, where a very similar drama played out in 2006. The land was sold by the county to developers in 2015. The reserve it sits next to is Six Nations of the Grand River, the most populated reserve in Canada. The encampment, where protesters have been blocking construction, was cleared out by provincial cops who were acting on a court injunction on August 5th. The protesters came right back the next day. The cops could raid it again at any moment. The pressure is building. The whole thing could fizzle out, or it could escalate. We have seen this play out many times before, and we've heard it told many times, usually from the perspective of guys like me or Doug Ford. Today we're going to hear about this one from a different perspective, from CanadaLand contributors Carl Dockstader and Sean Vanderklis, hosts of the radio show and podcast One Dish, One Mic. Carl and Sean went to the site of the occupation last week. A site that the development company, Foxgate, calls Mackenzie Meadows. The Six Nations protesters call it 1492 Landback Lane. Wait for it. This episode is brought to you by Christine Nicole Funk, Erica Kasupinen,
Gary Mooney, Hamza M., Kelly McWilliam, Jen Jubenville, Joshua Eric Tompke, and Kat.
Hi, my name is Kat, and I support Canada Land because we need media criticism in Canada. We need biases exposed. We need the stories that no one else wants to tell told, and we need them told well. As a progressive voting resident of Alberta especially, we need critical and well-researched journalism to hold politicians of all parties accountable. I love listening to Oppo and hearing strong and passionate opinions and counter-arguments from smart and self-assured women. As for Jesse, I appreciate his passion, but I could recite his biases and favorite hills to die on in my sleep at this point. Shortcuts might be his show, but I want to hear more from his guests and less of him telling us what he thinks his guests are trying to say. Just saying. Thanks for everything you do, Canada Land.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter, like, seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode is brought to you by Douglas, a mattress trusted by more than 200,000 Canadians from coast to coast to coast. Trust is important. There are a lot of mattress lies out there, a lot of mattress liars. And I didn't intend the pun, but it occurred to me that there is one as I was saying those words. Listen, I am not lying to you. I have experienced the Douglas mattress. It is an exceptional mattress at a surprisingly affordable price point. It is a mattress that sleeps cool, doesn't have that weird thing in the summer where the mattress gets like an oven. It's a very good product. It's delivered to your house in a box. You don't have to go to a big mattress store. It is a medium firm mattress, which is what Canadians prefer, and it comes with a 365-night trial and a 20-year warranty. What more can I tell you? Douglas is giving our listeners a free sleep bundle with each mattress purchase. Get the sheets, pillows, mattress, and pillow protectors free with your Douglas purchase today. Visit douglas.ca/CanadaLand to claim this offer. Sean, hello.
How are you doing, Jesse?
I'm okay. Carl, good to have you back as well.
Hey, Jesse. Thanks for having me on your show today.
Guys, what is 1492 Land Back Lane?
1492 Land Back Lane is where land defenders from Six Nations went and occupied a territory that Lozani Homes and other developers were seeking to develop in the Caledonia area in Haldimand County. It's an area that is directly adjacent to Six Nations territory that was promised to the Six Nations people all the way back in pre-Confederate times, and a promise that was never properly fulfilled. It has gotten to a point where the situation has escalated, and police tried to enforce an injunction. They successfully arrested 9 people who turned around and were replaced by land reclaimers that took back 1492 Land Back Lane. They're in about 4 weeks now of a stalemate of no resolution between what the developer is hoping will happen to the land, what the province wants to happen to the land, and what the people of Six Nations are hoping will happen to the land.
Six Nations itself is the largest reserve in Canada. There's 27,000 members who are registered as described in the Indian Act. Now, should Indigenous people and First Nations be given the authority to control their own membership, that number would increase tenfold.
The other thing is framing it as a reserve is a little bit tricky. It's Canada that called it a reserve. We've always referred to ourselves as nations, as a confederacy. So they were promised in the Haldimand Proclamation that they were going to get territory 6 miles deep or 10 kilometers deep on either side of the Grand River from the mouth to the head. And slowly over time, squatters would take over that territory. People would move in. They would put 99 10-year leases, and then the lease would come up and the Six Nations people would go to collect, and the government would have a different reason every time for eventually just bit by bit by bit dwindling this Six Nations land down to the size of a postage stamp. And now fast forward to 2020, where we're in the very real situation that there are a lot of people that live in Six Nations. There are a lot of people that want to live in Six Nations. There's no place to go. And then the kicker is that Caledonians are building houses literally surrounding Six Nations territory. So not only is there no place to go now, but once these subdivisions get built, there's not going to be any place for these people to go. So some people had had enough, and they moved into what was once Mackenzie Meadows and has now been reclaimed as 1492 Landback Lane.
Help me just conceptualize this. You've been there many times, and I know that you recently went there with our producer, Kasia Mihailovic, to record some of the people who are there. What does it look like?
It looks like a construction site, especially initially when it just looked like what was once a beautiful farm, like all the farms that are in and around Caledonia. It's a beautiful rural area. But this particular area looks like somebody took all of the natural greenery and just scraped it into a giant mountain at the back of the property. Scattered throughout the property are several tents where people are living. And then all throughout are different people interacting and socializing. Every time we've gone back, they've added something new, whether it's more tents, the temporary cookhouse that they added, markers for the games of the golf that they're playing, and most recently they've built a kitchenette to add to the area.
So if I understand this, the protesters, I know they self-identify as land defenders, they basically set up a permanent camp?
Yeah, the core group of land defenders initially committed to staying there 24 hours a day until this was resolved. Since then, since the injunction issue was ordered and the OPP raided it, it's drawn up significant amounts of community support, and that community support translates to people being there all the time, whether it's 4 hours a day to drop off food, to hang out, to visit, to eat dinner, as well as the remaining core community group who is living there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
What do the demonstrators themselves make of this characterization of them as being unlawful, potentially even violent, unpeaceful people?
The funny thing is that they knew that they were going to be portrayed as violent people, and they've done their due diligence to ensure that this doesn't happen.
So Micah, who is one of the spokespeople for 1492 Landback Lane, actually addressed this exact point directly when we spoke with her.
Scano, my name is Micah from Six Nations. So we came in like late a Sunday night, so we would be here and on the land before like because the next day is Monday and they're coming into work. So we purposely chose to do it that way so there wouldn't be a confrontation, and that it wouldn't be like people, you know, scared because a bunch of Indians are driving in. Yeah, so then if we were already here, then we would merely have to say, you know, you're not working anymore. And I know, so I understand, like not that they're removed from each other, but I think people don't realize the reaction of the barricades and the blocking of the railroads and all that stuff was like, it was a response directly to the violence that was inflicted while the raids happened, right? So that was never our purpose. That was never our goal. And like, I mean, beautifully, the community came out to support us in such a way and show like their support for us. And like, everybody here is like so absolutely grateful.
What violence is Micah referring to there? I mean, we hear her saying that they went to some planning and very explicitly were trying to avoid confrontation. What was this violent confrontation that she's talking about?
So when the OPP raided the 1492 Landback Lane, they did so with guns. One of the gentlemen who was arrested and in charge that day has to be in his early 60s, maybe late 50s. They five of them took him down, beat him up a little bit. When he was released from prison, he came back with marks all over his face, cuts and bruises all over his elbows and his knees. And then they proceeded to shoot people with rubber bullets.
We also spoke with Skylar Williams, who is another one of the media's spokespeople and somebody that's been giving daily updates on 1492 Landback Lane.
And when the cops came in, like that was it kind of turned things for a bit. It turned things really ugly for a while. Because it was, people were scared. Like one of my brothers is not here right now that should be here, because he was here from day one, and it was really hard for him to, you know, hear bullets whizzing past your head, rubber bullets or otherwise. We didn't know at the time whether they were rubber bullets or not, But like to hear those things go whizzing by your ears is a hard thing to deal with. And
can you describe some more of the tactics that the police use? They say they fired one bullet. All the media is saying they fired one rubber bullet.
There was at least three. There was at least three bullets, rubber bullets that were fired at us. One of the guys got tasered in the head and in the neck. He had to go for some medical attention afterwards. Another guy got his face. He's here right now. He's got his big cuts on his face and ear and neck from cops laying on the back of his head with his face in the concrete in the pavement.
I was in the territory the day that this happened, and I happened to be at the Cayuga OPP station when people were being released from custody, and I ran into one of the gentlemen who had blood on both of his elbows. His entire body was caked in mud. He had mud caked into his hair. Another person I talked to was a younger person, and this younger person was describing to me the realization that this was their first criminal charge, that they were going to have a criminal record out of it, and the reality that the police had turned the tables on them and could use this now to leverage them, and it would forever change their life. And I've seen that look in young people's eyes before when they realize that once you get a criminal record, everything changes. And I could just see his world crumbling around him as the realization was setting in that he was just trying to do a good thing, and now he's going to have to spend a significant amount of time in court.
But I heard Micah talk about actually like blocking roads and things like that. How did that end up happening?
That was a direct response to the raid itself. So one of the things that we need to be crystal clear on is that 1492 Land Back Lane is its own standalone land reclamation site. After the raid itself, members of Six Nations community then set up additional blockades to protect their community.
Fucking let's go!
So this road was open about 5 minutes ago. Now this bypass, also known as the Highway 6 bypass, is shut down. It's empty.
So the OPP were attempting to make their way onto the reserve itself, and members of the community said, you know what, this is unacceptable. This is sovereign land. You are not welcome here. And they were actually successful in pushing them back. On top of that, there was a train blockade for the day itself, and they also blocked off Highway 6.
When the people that got arrested got out of jail, those of us that were here with Land Back, we again, same way as we were the first day, we just drove back onto site. Everything was still here, right? So we just sat back down in the chairs and lit the fire back up, and we've been continuing on. And so in regards to the ongoing barricades, again, that's like the community support in solidarity with us, just because they want to know we're safe from the OPP.
So this is reminding me of Wet'suwet'en, where the more the RCMP cracked down, the more we saw solidarity actions across the country.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what's happened. Since then, we believe that the Wet'suwet'en people have since blocked off railways in support of what's happening in Caledonia.
And what would be the desired outcome for the encampment, for this action? What do they want the developers to do?
They want them to stop developing. They essentially want the land back. Since the late 1970s, the people of Six Nations have submitted 29 land claims to the federal government and the provincial government. And within that time period, only one has been addressed. And it wasn't even addressed properly. This is a response to the mechanisms that are in place that are forced upon Indigenous people.
It kind of floored me that after Wet'suwet'en became the biggest story in Canada, that something like this could be going on for like, what is it? It's third or fourth week, and for it to get as little media coverage as it has. I know that you've both been active and involved in this, both as participants and as journalists. What do you make of the media coverage so far, or lack thereof?
What we're seeing from our end is that there's a inability or unwillingness for them to make any meaningful attempt to go on to the reserve or to the reclamation site itself. There's been no attempt to speak with people who are actively participating in the reclamation site itself. And that's problematic because they're covering a story. So this is being framed in media and in the public perception from the perspective of developers or from the perspective of onlookers looking in. I am a journalist. I get paid by Torstar to report on issues. I know the restraints that exist. I know that we have deadlines, but part of being a good journalist is hearing sides and perspectives from different people. And what's happening now is that journalists, again, are not making a meaningful attempt to get in contact with people. What they're doing is they're sending letters off to the band council and speaking to them, because that's convenient. It takes me 2 seconds to send off an email. But what really matters and what's really important is making that connection. Carl and I have been there since day one. We literally drove back, or I literally drove back at 7 o'clock at night to cover the after effects of that raid that happened that day.
I mean, that's our angle, is that Sean and I are on, like, we're boots on the ground and we're there. We're declaring our bias, by the way. Like, every Sunday when we go on the radio, we talk about how the fact that I'm a direct stakeholder. Like, I'm Oneida of the Thames. And while that community is separate from the Six Nations people, we're declaring it. So I think that's relevant. I think that's why so many people from other media outlets are reaching out to us.
Well, you know, we share a conception of, like, just tell people who you are and where you're coming from, and you can still tell the story. It doesn't mean you can't tell the story. It just means you have to be transparent and honest, and we're on the same page with that. I want to ask you to do something that I think is going to be uncomfortable. I want you to pretend that you're the developer, and from your perspective, all of that history is not your problem or your fault. What the Canadian government, what the province promised in the past, that's not your doing. You've put work and investment and lobbying into this. You've been at this for years. You've sunk millions into it. You stand to make a fortune if this goes forward. And you can look back on a series of precedents. These kinds of standoffs, as we keep saying, have happened again and again and again throughout Canadian history. And I want to ask you to strategize from that perspective. People can't stay in that encampment forever. If it was your goal to push this development through, would you wait this out? Would you push back strong and ask the cops to push back harder? How would you proceed with this?
Well, the developer in this case was very strategic when doing the negotiations. A part of it included a lump sum of money to be paid back should an event like this happen. Another significant portion of it was that because 1492 Land Back Lane is happening, they have to condemn this, the elected council. So the developers themselves anticipated this. They saw what happened in 2006, and they then put this in writing. And unfortunately, the elected council conceded. So regardless of this going through or not, the developer is going to get their money back.
What are the odds of this actually being settled through the courts?
We asked Micah, one of the spokespeople at the camp, what she thought about the court process.
I know it's seen, like, in some circles as, like, over the top or, like, disruptive to be doing things like this, but, like, it's absolutely necessary because our, like, Indigenous battles will never be won in the courts. Never, ever will they be won in the courts. It always comes on the land. It always comes from feet on the ground, you know, hearts beside each other, hands held together. That's where our wins come from, and I just absolutely believe that.
That's I know that's intended as a kind of an inspirational thought, but it also triggers some concern, because on the ground is also where things can go the other way. I think that this sometimes does end with development getting so frustrated for so long that ultimately it just sort of dissolves. But this also can end a different way. This can end in bloodshed, and it has in the past.
I'm not sure that that's a realistic outcome for Canada. The Six Nations people, specifically of all of the hundreds of First Nations people in Canada, have really stuck to their guns when it comes to sovereignty. I'm telling you right now, Jesse, that I'm not a Canadian citizen. I was born in Buffalo. I'm not an American citizen. That I'm from the Oneida Nation, and that is something that firmly exists outside of the body politic of Canada. So if Canada is going to resolve this with violence, then we saw how that went in Oka when the people of Gunasadage were effectively sieged. Canada is very mindful of its reputation. This, I think, would effectively destroy any credibility they have on the world stage. So imagine how this is going to look on a prime minister who originally got elected on his intent for meaningful nation-to-nation reconciliation. You can just shred that if this ends in violence.
Do you believe that? Because the Canadian public, I think, was ultimately cheering on our leaders to get tougher and get more violent in the face of protests historically and as recently as Wet'suwet'en that had widespread support to just shut it down. Has something changed so significantly that it's just such a bad look and it's so aberrant to the way we're trying to present ourselves internationally that the prospect of that will shut it down before it even happens?
It's easy for me to click a button to say that I don't, that I do or don't like a reclamation action that's happening. But the difference is with Indigenous people, their entire way of life is under threat in so many communities. And in Haudenosaunee territories, our way of life has been under threat to the degree where I think that our willingness to defend this is effectively unlimited. A little bit of police action firmed the resolve of Indigenous people to resist. So imagine what a lot of police action is going to do.
One thing that seems to keep coming up again and again is this question of who actually represents these communities. And companies and governments seem to have a lot of success dealing with band councils and then finding the legitimacy of those band councils contested by actual people that those councils are supposed to represent. Are we just going to keep going through this again and again until we resolve this question of representation?
Well, I think the people of Six Nations are a little more unified than people give them credit for. Again, to criticize the media, any disunity in Six Nations tends to be amplified. But on this particular issue, there's a lot of unity. Quite simply, the people of Six Nations want some place to live.
All of us at Landback Camp here have said over and over and over again, like, I don't care anymore about the hate and the division, and like, it's taken us 100 years to get to this point. And so if it takes us 100 years to be able to heal and grow, do the things that we need to do as a community, then that's what it's going to take. But there isn't going to be development rolling up on our doorstep in the meantime. Because if we're going to allow for that development to keep on happening, then, you know, my kids, my grandkids aren't going to have anything to even argue over.
The problem is in Canada, they have forced upon a foreign system to First Nations communities. So it dates back to the 1920s. They literally went in with gun in hand and removed the hereditary chiefs and the Haudenosaunee Confederacy from power and then imposed a system upon them that says, this is how your community is going to be governed. You're going to govern your community in this manner and the manner that we see fit. In Six Nations, their democracy, their Confederacy chiefs themselves have existed for the last 10,000 years. They've been so fundamentally successful that parts of the United States Constitution and parts of the distributions of powers that exist within this United States is based on the structure of the Haudenosaunee people. So the issue is that the government has put in place a system that the people themselves do not recognize. 4.5% of the population voted in their last election for chief and council.
One thing I can certainly agree with, if you've got less than 5% voter turnout, you do not have a functional democracy.
That's fair. But I mean, further to that, the whole notion of representative democracy is not something that plays well in Haudenosaunee communities. We have a participatory form of democracy. And that's exactly what Landback Lane is people have actively decided what they're going to do and what they want their territory to look like. And that, honestly, I think is something that Canada could benefit from a little bit more. Again, it's easy to click a button or to show up and to tick a box on any given day. But what are you doing on the days, weeks, months, and years in between elections to continuously renew your democracy and to renew your values? How do we know what the values of Canadians are when they're so passively involved in their democratic process?
And I wonder what happens when you kind of put, you know, in one form or another, a referendum to the Canadian public, armed conflict on one side, giving land back on the other. I'm not sure which they'd vote for.
And that's part of the problem is that in order for us to coexist, both sides have to be willing to come together and make those sacrifices. The very concept of the township of Caledonia is on a concession on the part of the people of Six Nations. The reason the town exists dates back to the 1830s, and Six Nations then said that, yes, we will lease this land to you for a period of 23 years with the possibility of renewal and extension in 7-year intervals. And since then, they've just stayed. Like, Six Nations, the problem is that Indigenous people continuously make these concessions and Canadians continuously take.
It seems to me that for one group of people, it's very important for Indigenous people to assert, correctly that they are the same people who those promises were made to. And I think it's very important for Caledonians and Canadians to believe that they are not the same people who made those promises. Those are some other people in history. That's not me.
And that's part of the problem, is that we have fundamentally been framed in mainstream media as a people of the past.
But I'm not ready to give up on Canadians yet. I mean, I have some pretty strong feelings about people who oppose these things. But I've also met people that educate themselves on the issues, and people that understand, like, if you just walked a mile or 6 miles in the shoes of the people from Six Nations, you can actually see where they're coming from. Because we're talking about police, we're talking about violence, we're talking about land back, we're talking about reclamation and all these flashy terms. But all we really want is the right to continue our way of life. And we have a very consistent value set that we've been practicing for 10,000 years. I think Canadians want the same things for themselves. So sooner or later, they're going to come over to the fact that being a Canadian is supposed to be about something. If this gets resolved in violence and, you know, some populist push to crush the revolution, I mean, is that what Canadians really want to be about? Because at some point, people are going to wake up the morning after and realize that they may not have pulled the trigger themselves, but they allowed this to happen. And I can't see Canadians wanting to define themselves with that value set. Not any of the good ones that I talk to anyways.
What do people at 1492 Land Back Lane say they are prepared to do?
We've asked that question directly.
Well, I think having an injunction on us, we're like fearful, like 24/7. We're under like constant, threat of invasion. So that's a little bit nerve-wracking. But I think everybody here is committed to the cause, and we just persevere through that and stand strong.
A cop on the very first day that we were here come and asked me how long we had planned on being here. And I told him that very first day that, like, our people have been here for 10,000 years and we're planning on being here for 10,000 more.
They're willing to go through whatever the Canadian government is willing to put them through, and that's really it. If it's as simple as them staying there until this gets resolved or doesn't get resolved, fair. If it's as complicated as the police coming in and enforcing three other injunctions, they're willing to go through that process as well. If it's them getting their faces pushed in the mud or rubber bullets shot at them, they have all made a clear and conscious decision to participate at this, because protecting this land means securing it for further generations.
Sean and Carl, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Jesse.
Hey, that's your Canada Land. Support it, please, with $5 a month Canadian by clicking on the link in the show notes, or go to canadalandshow.com/join, or email me at jesse@canadalandshow.com, and I'll read it. We're on Twitter at Canada Land. Our website is canadalandshow.com, where you can sign up for our weekly newsletter, as tens of thousands of people have done. And this is a wonderful thing. If you don't happen to listen to everything that we put out every week and read all of our news stories, we put out a handy newsletter at the end of each week, which is also funny and also contains links to stuff that has nothing to do with us that our staff selects. It's a really good newsletter. Go check it out at canadalandshow.com. This episode was reported by Sean Vanderkliss and Carl Dockstader. You can catch their show, One Dish, One Mic, in its podcast form, if you're curious about that great show. Special thanks to Trevor Twining for production help. Kasia Mihailovic and Rosalind Kafour are the senior producers of Canada Land. Our managing editor is Andrea Schmidt. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like Canada Land, support it.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.